Closing Thoughts is the seventh and last video in the series, Resetting the Mind. This is what we have covered so far. In the first, habitual living, the I fabric or ego, some lessons from the past, and practical tips for awakened living. In the second, building on the first, we look deeper at what the flow of life provided and its need in our life today. In the third, we examined the dynamics of inner slipping, what to let go, abandoning otherness, and four good friends on the path. In the fourth, practice on the mat, and we started with understanding what practice is and why we practice, the foundations for practice, and getting started in practice. In the fifth, we discussed practice in life, the principles of practice in life, and the six areas of change. In the sixth, we brought it all together as a reset program, all of what we had covered together in a 7 to 14 day program for practice on the mat and in life. Friends, this is the seventh and last video, and today I'd like to have a heart-to-heart talk in three major areas. Practice in life, we'll start with that, then we'll go on to some principles on practice on the mat, and lastly, just some tips which we have discussed earlier, but we'll try and have a little bit more informal dialogue on them, and I hope with that, this would get you started on the reset program. If our practice does not bring about inner transformation, not much would have been accomplished. This is what we have in store for us today. Three areas where we'll have a heart-to-heart talk and sort of go down the laundry list, but not in a formal manner, in a very informal manner. And we'll try to touch upon things that are often overlooked. And it is those little things that can cause our practice to be less meaningful. We'll start with practice in life, move on to practice on the mat, and lastly, conclude with include these two. Let us begin.
Greetings. We started off in this series by talking about our problems. What are our problems? And are things outside, people, conditions, and things responsible for our problems, our happiness, our joys, and our sorrows? Or is it something else? And we looked at our reaction being not only the source of our problems, but the problems in themselves. So the question comes down to, what do we do about them? How do we live a life that's fully interactive, fully engaged, but careful about our reactions? Friends, the very first thing when we talk about change has to be self-responsibility. If we think that our problems or our conditions are caused by things outside, then that's the end of it. You cannot change it because it's something outside. You've got to change something outside, and there are n number of things outside. There's no end to that at all. Self-responsibility is bringing things up close. First of all, realizing that whatever we call our dissatisfactions, our sorrows, our stresses, our problems in life is experienced in me. If it's experienced in me, there is something that I can and should be able to do about it. And I must do about it. When we feel this sense of self-responsibility, then the journey to correction begins. The first two points in practice to life are probably the most important and also called the alpha and omega of yoga. That is vigilance and thought selection, thought association, both of these. Vigilance prevents you from slipping. Thought selection and thought association ensures that you are thinking and functioning in a healthy, positive manner, that we are not giving into habit, and that we are making wise choices. Let's break it down a little further. We've discussed about the various ways by which we can develop or cultivate this vigilance in our practice, and we're going to come to that a little later, touch a little bit later in the next segment of this video. But we've talked about that, this vigilance. Vigilance allows you to see the workings of the mind or the activity of the mind along with all things that are going on outside. It is not a total introspection at the cost of things outside. You don't die to the world and only watch your mind, because you can't live in that mode. Or at least it would be no fun even if you could. So the question is, along with seeing everything outside, can I bring this inner world into the field of observation and look at both these together, the outer, things happening outside, and also the inner, things happening inside? We know what happens outside, but what happens inside? The rise and fall of habit, thought, conditioning, all of these. Can I look at all of them? And you might say, well, how do you look at all of them together in the same plane? Well, we do experience it all together. We know of the outside and the inside in the same mind, do we not? Why is it not possible to see them together if they are experienced in the same mind? This whole thing of outside and inside, my friends, these are just concepts, and it is in our training, it is in our spiritual practices called our sadhanas or our yogas that we gradually come to this understanding. Once again, we're going to touch on that a little bit later, but I want to talk about this vigilance. Vigilance is being able a state where the outer and the inner are observed together without division. When you see that, you see what happens, and you see the rise or a reaction to it at the same time. You keep focused on what is happening, your reactions to it will rise, and just as easily they will fall, because you are making another choice of finding out what is happening by looking at it fresh, instead of looking at it, the memory and the conditioning part of it, which is generally how people are accustomed to looking at. These memories, these vasanas, these vrittis, these habits, and this conditioning, all these names are interchangeable. This has gained power by use, and it's going to weaken by disuse. But just, it doesn't happen in a vacuum, well, I just won't think about it. When we say disuse, what we are talking about is exhausting the memory that is infused in it. By looking, by paying attention to what actually is from moment to moment, these are going to rise, and not getting any new attention means not getting any new energy. They are going to fall. Each time they do that, they are going to weaken, because they are using up what is called residual energy. Just like any device, if you put it on battery and it's not plugged in, it's going to keep going till as long as it has a charge, and then it's going to stop. But plug that in and the power takes precedence again, and it will not tax a battery and keep going. And this is exactly what happens within. So if you feel the need for change, this need should activate That level of vigilance where you take a very keen interest in everything that is actually happening from moment to moment without any preference. Generally, we do take an interest, but we take an interest in those things that are beneficial to us, those things that are pleasure-giving or joy-giving, those things that we call our things or our people. That's what we do. And this wall has to be broken down if you want to understand and have vigilance. All things. Why? Because the rise and fall of these, of conditioning, vrittis, vasanas, habit, memory, is not only going to happen when favorable things happen, but also when unfavorable things happen. The rise and fall, conditioning rises and falls as a response that wants to act out every moment. So the key to breaking that cycle is to take a very active interest in everything you do, which naturally means that you've got to be able to cut out distraction completely. One thing at one time, with all of your heart, with all of your mind, and realize that there are no mundane or no special activities. Every activity, every blessed thing has equal value because it helps you see the mind and transcend the mind. Its inner value of action is the real value. The outer value of things doesn't have real value, my friends. Don't let it fool you. Now, I know you might be smiling and saying, well, the outer value does. By doing this, that, and the other, I make money, or I do this, or I do that. Okay, so you make money. But where is that going at the cost of yourself, at the cost of your mind, at the cost of the degradation of your own inner state? So, my friends, you've got to look at this balance sheet from a little bit wider. It's not as simple as that. All action has the same value because the value of the action is always inner. We get fooled by thinking it's out of the outer. I do this in such and such a way and this happens. Well, this happens, but what happens within? So, my friends, that is the very first thing that we come to. Self-responsibility, my happiness, my joy, my peace, my spiritual progress is my responsibility. No one outside is responsible for anything that happens to me. Second thing, there is something that I can do about it. And it starts now. Take a very keen interest in everything. Equal interest in everything keeps an equal level of attention on things. When you take an attention in things, you are not paying attention to thought, though you are aware of them. Here's the difference. You'll be fully aware of the rise and fall of thought, but you won't be interested in it. When you're not interested in it, it doesn't have any hold on you. For instance, if you don't drink and you pass by a pub or you pass by a bar, it doesn't make a difference if they advertise so-and-so for 50 cents. It's not you. You're not interested. There's something else that has your interest. It can advertise whatever it does. If you see a wallet on the floor, you're not going to be tempted to steal it if you have honesty. Because it doesn't matter what's in the wallet. The only reason you open the wallet to see who could it belong to. So when you're interested in honesty, dishonesty doesn't get any energy. So when you take an active interest, ongoing interest in everything, to be interested in everything, you have to see the same value in things. To see the same value in things, the action is not as important as the inner workings. So take an active interest in things, and this will have your attention on things. Awareness of the inner, but attention on the outer. This exhausts the momentum of inner conditioning as it rises and falls. As that gets weaker, it gets easier and easier each time you do it to act in the light of wisdom. And what is act in the light of wisdom? acting first of all in the light of what actually is presenting itself, and not on worry, not on supposition, not on hope, not on this could happen and that could happen. What is actually happening out there? And what is the best response? Is there a response necessary? And if so, what? And if there is a prompting of thought that this is happening, no, this is not happening, this is happening. And that is what we mean by thought selection and thought association. Thought selection is what you choose to think on. When you pay attention to what is actually happening, thought selection becomes very easy. The thought goes to that which is already in front of you. Thought association is an association of the reality of the moment with the moment in itself. You see what is happening, and that is what registers. And if there is any other prompting from within, a very simple correction. This is what is happening. You don't even have to say, this is not happening, or why did this have to arise in me, or when are these thoughts going to die down in me? All of that negative business is not necessary, my friends. Just a positive affirmation, not by a prompting, a mental prompting as such, but by looking, by actually seeing, by actually being engaged in what is out there. Initially, when you get this mechanism going, you may verbalize to yourself, this is what is happening. Mentally, you may just verbalize to yourself mentally, this is what is happening. Now, what do I do about it? Each time you associate this is what is happening, the event or the occurrence, with thought, you have made a correction in thought selection and thought association. You have associated thinking or considering what is happening with what is actually taking place. When you do that, my friends, you break the cycle, the inner cycle of your consciousness or awareness facing thought, and you turn consciousness or awareness out to face what is out there. This is the very first correction that has to be made. Generally, when people worry, stressful people, tense people, their awareness or their consciousness faces thought, the ideas and notions that they have built up by thinking and ruminating on them. And so whatever it faces like a mirror, it reflects back. When you take an interest in things, this awareness or thought faces what is out there, and it doesn't face thought. Thought rises, conditioning rises and falls, and gradually exhausts itself. But you have to cooperate with this in several different ways. Number one, especially in today's times, there already is a lot going on out there. Stimulus, media, technology, all of this. You have to reduce the unnecessary input, the access to media and things like that, while you are making your mind healthy. Because you cannot be clear and be able to look at things if there is a constant bombardment of stimulus, because it's that stimulus, taking in all of that stimulus, that is going to compete with your attention. And your attention has to be on what is actually going on out there. So reduce the unnecessary input as far as possible. Number two, take out the triggers of stress from your life by, first of all, not lecturing others. I know sometimes we mean well, and they may be your kith and kin or people that are close, but don't lecture. Talk with selected words when you're asked. And the second thing is not to advertise change. Never advertise change. Well, I'm working on this. I'm trying to get a control. Because how are you doing about it? How are things coming along? Let me tell you what this person's doing. You don't want to get into all of that. Just change beneath the hood. So never advertise change. Don't lecture others. And number three, shut down the complaint and fault-finding department. A complaint or fault is not usually with things outside, but our dissatisfaction with things outside. I wish it were that way. Or I hope it could be like this. Why isn't it like that? So when we complain and fall fine, my friends, once again, the awareness or consciousness faces thought. So let us sum up this thing about practice in life. The very first thing is taking responsibility. In correction, take an active interest in things, realizing that all action has equal value. This develops a level of vigilance where the attention includes whatever is going out there along with whatever is rising and falling in here or conditioning. The attention is on things outside, the awareness includes both. While you do that, train yourself in thought selection and thought association, not by fighting with the mind, but by actually engaging what is and acting in the best light of wisdom that you have. What needs to be done? Not what do I need to do? Again, the I is the problem. What needs to be done? Does it need a response? If yes, what is the best way to do it? And that's it. That's the forward part of practice in life. The back end are three or four ways in which you have to help yourself along with this is to reduce unnecessary input, stimulus we are talking about. Two, don't lecture others. Three, never advertise change. And four, shut down the fault-finding and complaint departments. So, we've talked a little bit about practice in life, and we started off with that thing called vigilance. And I said we would come back to the practices, and this is where we look at them, friends. On practice on the mat, we discussed about five basic types of practices. A routine of 10 basic asanas, yoga postures, a little pranayama, or yoga breathing, a little study, a little meditation, and a little kirtan. Something for the body, something for the breathing and our vitals, something for our mind. Meditation to sharpen the inner awareness, and a little kirtan for the heart. We've got a little diet about a little bit of each. Now in this segment, I'm not going to talk in depth about the actual practices because we've done that before when we've gone over them. But what we do need to look at is this thing called the yoga element in them or the yoga spirit in them, because that is often overlooked. If that is overlooked, you may gain expertise in certain things, in doing asanas, in holding your breath for a while, pranayama, or in scriptural study, or even in techniques of meditation, or in singing ability. But being able to bend backwards and touch your, grab your feet the other way around doesn't necessarily make you a yogi. Being able to hold your breath for minutes or hours on end is not going to make you a yogi. What makes it a yogi? Yoga, there are many definitions to the word yoga. Yuj, to join back, oneness, unity, harmony. To discover the existing harmony that already exists. Now, how does this come in our practices? Let's start off with asanas. And let me, for example, talk about Pachimottasana. Pachimottasana is when you spread your legs out in front of you with your legs together and you bend forward and grab a hold of either your ankles or your feet and bring your head to your knees. It's also called the westward asana because the west part of your body is stretched completely forward, completely all the way. Now, what actually happens when you do asana? When you do asana, my friends, not only does your body do asana, your breath does the asana, and your mind has to do the asana. How does this happen? The intention registers, I'm going to do Pachimottasana. You get into the position, bring your feet forward if you've been lying down, and you gradually come forward and let yourself out into the asana. You go as far as you can naturally till you feel that tightness and you hold. That is as far that you want to go consciously, but that's not as far as you are going to go, period. When you hold it and say, I still want to get it, the breath starts adjusting already. You breathe it out to bend forward. Your breathing starts slowing down even more, and your lung volume starts slowing down, thinning out even more to allow your lungs to compress further. After that point, the muscles that were tight start loosening out because the inner intelligence takes charge. That has to do the asana, and that will only do the asana if your mind is also in the asana. So your mind has to be with holding just one thought, and that is the shape of this asana that is desired. I am doing this, and I am going this far and as far as I can. The mind should be able to go further than the body does. When the mind is also in that position of asana and it's not all over the place, the mind goes to a portion just a little further than the body and holds. It is then that the inner intelligence realizes, and this inner intelligence always wants to act, but it gets interfered with the mind. The body wants one thing, the mind wants something else, the feelings want something else, and while they are vying, going all over the place, sometimes the body pushing on the mind, sometimes the mind pushing over the body, and it happens, doesn't it? Take a simple example of jogging, for instance. You go a certain way, and then you feel a little out of breath, and then you push yourself physically, try to push the mind. No, I'm going to make it. And you just try to pick up the pace a little bit. Then you try to encourage the body with the mind, the mind with the body with the mind. Or then you try to say, well, I'll get distracted. Put on this little music player or something else, and I won't pay attention to any of these. I'll put my mind on the music and keep going. But life doesn't happen like that. You can't live your life distracted. So you shouldn't train that way. The way you train is the way you react. So all of you has to do this. When you jog, all of you has to jog. Your mind has to jog. The mind is a real doer. It not only initiates, but it's got to do the action itself. If when you jog, your mind is also jogging, it won't even think about the soreness of the body. So let's come back to our asana. You're holding it, your mind is also doing the asana. For all practical purposes, your mind is in the same position that your body is, and maybe just a little bit further. The inner intelligence starts working on releasing the necessary flexibility, or giving you the necessary flexibility for this asana. What happens as a result, my friends? These clear demarcations that we have, this is my body, this is my breathing, this is my mind, and this is my awareness that's watching my mind, all different. This is solid, this is a little bit more fluid, etc. Those start melting. You begin to not even know where this, because each is cooperating with one another, and each knows what the other is doing. Therefore, they have to be tied by some inner intelligence, because this inner intelligence knows what the mind is doing, it knows what the breath is doing, and it knows what the body is doing. Therefore, this inner intelligence must pervade all. This inner intelligence being non-different from me, and I'm talking about this undivided intelligence that pervades all, I must pervade all of these, and how then am I limited to it? You break the limitations that we have when we start off, I am the body, I am too tight, I can't do this, and all of that stuff. And my friends, gradually, as this inner intelligence takes over, the body is in the asana and holding till it can go further. The breathing has become a little bit shallow in its lung volume and its air volume to allow you to bend, and it's cooperating and doing its part, or it's doing its asana. The mind is doing its asana. And what happens, my friend? This inner intelligence now starts doing the asana. It flows through all of them, giving that little boost. The body's flexibility, tweaking the volume of the lung, and at the same time, energizing the mind with the suggestion that now you can go a little further. This whole inner process, to experience this whole inner process through asana, is to understand our relationship with this inner awareness or intelligence that we are, the mind, one of our instruments, the breathing, one of our instruments and faculties, and the body as one of our instruments. You are not the body, you are embodied. There is a difference. You have a body. You are not the mind, you have a mind. You are not the breath, breathing happens. Now we do the same thing with pranayama, the same thing with a little bit of study. Pranayama is a little bit easier to understand. It comes closer to what we've been talking in asanas. But study, how does this happen in study at all? When you study, that which feels bound comes to these words and tries to understand by feeling, how can this be true? It looks not at the translation or the meaning of the words, but what the words imply to. What is this author of this word trying to suggest? What is he trying to point out to? And it looks at that, and it looks within itself to see how can that experience be had. And it tries to know this within itself. As it tries to know this, the counter arguments of conditioning come up. No, this can't happen, that can't happen, this is contrary to what I've heard. It disregards that, and it keeps focusing on itself, thereby exhausting conditioning, weakening conditioning, and inquiring into how something could be possible and experienced for oneself. So my friends, we are not studying scriptures. Through scriptures and texts, we are studying ourselves. And then I spoke a little bit about meditation, which is very important because it is a direct observation of the mind. And we have gone into depth with all of this, and there are other videos that I have on YouTube and writings on my website. And last of all, kirtan. Kirtan is again very important, and a lot of people make light of it. And they say, well, I don't do that singing stuff, or I don't have a good voice. Friends, what has good voice got to do with it? If your heart at that moment is adoring God, what has voice got to do with it? Does a mother get graded on her voice or her vocabulary or her verbiage when she talks to her child? Does a mother who knows more flowery talk get an A+? And a mother who doesn't but is very loving get an F or a fail grade? Does that happen? It doesn't happen. And just look at nature, my friends. Just look at it. Everything in nature does what it needs to the very fullest of its ability. That crow sings like the best it possibly could, and another singing bird sings the best that they could. They're not in competition with one another. The crow doesn't, get shy when a good singing bird comes along and says, well, you're here, so, well, I'll just wait till you're done because I don't want to look bad, or I can't sing. My friends, each flower, whether it's a wildflower or a rose, is being the best that it can without competition with one another. What does it make a difference if you can sing or not? What does it make a difference if you can pronounce the words authentically or not? All those things, my friends, are inessential. They have no use, have no value at all, none in the language of yoga. That I have to be able to pronounce this, what will people think? That's all ego play. And the people that are too concerned about that know where they stand. Kirtan is an expression of the heart. as you start singing, kirtan is not shouting the name of God. It is not all the drums and instruments and all of that. You have a small accompaniment to keep your mind steady. You know, some people have a harmonium. And there are other things like a little, a shruti box. It's a small little box that you can, like a harmonium, and it just keeps a steady tone for people that want to sing for a while, just like meditating for a while. But basically, it really doesn't involve any of that, though you could use some of that as support when you are going for a long distance. Just like if you're meditating for hours on end, you may change an asana in the middle, and it's okay. But generally, you try not to move. But when you do kirtan, my friends, the most important thing is to keep it as slow as you can hear it, so your attention and the volume is not high, not on changing a lot of things. You're using the sound to keep your attention steady. And gradually, you may start off singing kirtan to your prayer area, your puja area, your worship area. But gradually, your eyes begin to close. And gradually, you begin to look for what you were looking at outside within you. Gradually, your volume begins to thin down. As the interest begins to dwindle or as thoughts begin to rise, you can increase the volume just a little bit again, and then you can decrease the volume again. So you use this to keep your attention introverted, and you look for that. You're not singing to that idol, you're not singing to that picture in your prayer area, but what is in that? Some people criticize idol worship and picture worship and things like that. They just don't understand anything about any of this. You're not worshiping an idol. You're not worshiping a picture. You're worshiping that which is in it. What is that that makes even the seeing of it possible? What is that that holds it all together? What is beneath every atom and molecule in that? That which is in that, that allows that to take that shape, is in me, is in the whole cosmos, and the whole cosmos is in it. So my friends, you start off from the outside. You may be singing to a picture or an idol, and gradually your volume will start. You may start a little enthusiastically. Gradually your volume will start to thin down. And as your volume starts to thin down, your eyes come just as if they were shutting lightly, and your attention is introverted. The volume goes down, and as the volume goes down, the attention goes in, because the attention was tied to the volume initially, and it follows it in, and you try to see that which is in that, in this, in kirtan, and it's a beautiful experience. In all these, how does that bring about a change in mind? Firstly, it brings about unification of body, mind, and heart. All of you is doing the same thing. And when all of you is doing the same thing, and you're aware of it, the distinctions, the borders between body, mind, breath, and awareness, all these start dwindling down. Feelings, heart, all these start coming together. You start becoming one and foreseeing yourself at one. And you're able to put the oneness of who you are on the activity which you are involved in. Whether it be asanas, pranayama, study, meditation, or kirtan. If you can do it here, surely you can do it in life also. It's the same thing. And that's why this is called practice. Practice on the mat. You practice in a sequestered area with one activity. And when you do it in life, even though I've called it practice in life, that's actually training. Because training includes people, conditions, and things. Whereas in practice, you're by yourself. Even though you may be practicing with a few people, you may be seeing other people, but mostly practice is alone. Training is with others in that environment. So if I was to just loosely make this demarcation between two of them, it's probably where it will be. So these practices, my friend, of integrating yourself and putting that integrated person that you are, all of you, on all of whatever activity you are involved in, makes you one with the activity itself. all of you becomes one with all of the activity. And guess what we just said? All becomes one with the all. And you discover the allness or the oneness that alone exists. If this discovery is not made in your practice, in your sadhana, much has been missed. And if this discovery is felt, even in small choppy steps in your sadhana, my friends, you can transplant that in life and say, how does all of me face all of that at my work, at my family, at all of that? And every aspect of your life is going to get refreshed, because conditionings, cold fingers, are not going to be able to interfere with you anymore, because there are no divisions within you where it can come in. You have become one, and that one is giving itself to whatever field of activity you may be involved in. You may be with your family, maybe at work, you may be at whatever. Oneness is moving with the oneness without a tinge of selfishness. You become one with not only within yourself first, but with things, with events, with circumstances, with people. You don't stand outside. And this is also called universalizing your being, which we shall get into probably in some other series. But in this last talk of the series, Resetting the Mind, I wanted to link these two together, practice in life, or which we call training, and practice on the mat, and say why this practice on the mat is so necessary to practice in life, and why that is so necessary to bring about a revolution in our being. This radical change of resetting ourselves from a worrisome and scattered way of living to a focused, purposeful, joyful, peaceful and peace-giving way of living. We've talked about a lot of things in the first two segments of this video. We've talked about practice in life, starting off with self-responsibility. And then we moved across the Alpha and Omega, which is not this, but that. Vigilance, introspection, being aware of, not giving into habit, and rather giving into proper, better, healthier choices, or selecting healthier choices in their place. This not giving into passion and not giving into habit, not giving into conditioning, is called vairagya in the language of yoga. And the application of oneself wisely to that which is good, wholesome, better, is called abhyasa. These two are the alpha and omega of yoga. Then we discussed a few things that we should do to support ourselves, like reduce the amount of input, stimulus, things of that kind. In the second segment, my friends, we talked about these five practices, and we went a little bit deeper. The practices must involve, first of all of us doing that activity that requires all of us coming together. And then all of us coming together to be applied to the entire activity, so there is no distinction felt. You wouldn't even know when you were doing the asana that I am doing the asana. The asana is doing the asana. It has to come down to that level. In meditation, consciousness is meditating on itself. When you are singing, that heart is singing to itself. It has to bridge the gap, so we have to make ourselves one together. All of us has to do it. The mind has to do it. The feelings have to do it. The body has to do it. Your breath has to do it. Every hair on your head has to do that activity. And you have to do it with every ounce of your heart completely, till there is no difference between you and the activity. There is only that which is happening. If there is an asana happening, there is only Pachimottasana. Everything stands together. And then if we learn these secrets of the yoga way, the yoga spirit, or the yoga element. You can and you should be able to apply these onto life. But my friends, in this third segment, we've got what we call a couple saved rounds out here. Little small, little pebbles here and there that we need to pay attention to. You cannot do this sporadically. You cannot approach this whimsically. You cannot just come to this and do this a little bit and try that a little bit. Yoga is a very straight scientific process. So have a resolve and put it in writing. I am going to do this. I am going to improve in this way. I am going to take responsibility for myself, handle and get a handle on myself, and I am going to make time for this because it counts. To have a daily plan. This is how I'm going, what I need to be doing to support my aspiration. Third is self-accountability. Now that you've done it, what if you slip? What if your lower nature gives way? What when you skip things? You've put them there. You've made this plan. And when your lower nature gives in, there has to be self-accountability or self-punishment. And this is not some foolish thing of going and abusing yourself in some way. That doesn't do anything. But if you realize, well, I ate late, did this and went that and skipped this, then extra half an hour before you go to sleep, sacrifice a half an hour, 1 hour of sleep and say, that's my time for japa, meditation and whatever I missed. Or skip my meal, have a little glass of milk and say, that's all. Instead of the meal or dessert or whatever it is out there, I'm going to do this. A stern message has to be sent to your mind that these things just don't work. It's called accountability. It's just like in politics and things that are, when things go wrong, people put sanctions. There has to be a sanction on the mind. If you do this, this is the thing. That's it. Pull out your checkbook, write a check for charity, keep them ready, and mail it that very moment before moving any further, put it in the mailbox. That's it. Take out a shirt, one of your better shirts, probably one of your best shirts, put it in a bag and pack it tomorrow, this goes to charity. There are many, many ways you can send a stern message, and all these messages are not designed to punish, humiliate, or any of those childish things. They are to support your own aspiration. I'm not giving in to that which is not good for me. And I am going to support that which is good for me. Because if I don't support that which is good for me, who is? Okay. A simple vegetarian diet, my friends. Do your own chores. Don't depend on anybody for anything unless your health does not allow it. It does make a difference. I know a lot of people that say, well, you know, I don't have time, and if I spend all of my time doing all these chores, I'm not going to have time for my practice. If you're in that mode, then all of your practice too is probably not going to help. Make time and rearrange your priorities in such a way so there is time for everything. That's all that I would say on that. A brisk walk or jog every day, and not without your headphones and cell phones and iPod and tripod or any of those gadgets and gizmos. Just get outside with these 2 feet that God has given you and walk briskly till you get that heartbeat going up just a little bit, and then slow down and then pick it up again. And go for a couple of miles every single day. Then stand in one place, get a little exercise, turn your arms around, do a little bit of stretching. Avoid all forms of negative thinking, my friends. Every time the mind wants to go on something negative, choose something positive instead by saying, this way. And lastly, pray often. Pray often, not for anything else. Pray often because you love God. Prayer is communion with God. Pray for His help. Pray for His continued guidance. Pray for help to be better. And those prayers will be answered.
Friends, we've covered a lot of ground, not just today, but in the 7 videos that make up this series. Let me leave you with this one thought. Spiritual practice, untested in life, is like swimming, learnt on dry land. Thank you for joining me today. For more information, or to download this video or the audio of this presentation, kindly visit suryadevananda.org.